Pastor Chris Gordon begins today's Abounding Grace Radio with a rather poignant question.
Has there been a single sin over the course of your life that every time you become discouraged or down or frustrated with where the Lord has you, that you go back to, that you retreat to, that you go to? A particular sin. Is there? That little sin that you've kept and you've held on to is unbelief.
We call them besetting sins. Simply put, it's unbelief. Welcome to Abounding Grace Radio. Rather interesting question, and that leads us into where we're headed today in Genesis chapter 20. Welcome to Abounding Grace Radio. Quick reminder, if you have a question, open up your voice memo app, record it, email it to us, questions@agradio.org, and we'll have Pastor Chris answer it for you. Here's Pastor Chris now in Genesis 20 on today's program.
From there, Abraham journeyed toward the territory of the Negev and lived between Kadesh and Shur, and he sojourned in Gerar. And Abraham said of Sarah, his wife, "She is my sister," and Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. But God came to Abimelech in a dream by night and said to him, "Behold, you are a dead man because of the woman whom you have taken, for she is a man's wife." Now Abimelech had not approached her, so he said, "Lord, will you kill an innocent people? Did he not himself say to me, 'She is my sister'? And she herself said, 'He is my brother.' In the integrity of my heart and the innocence of my hands, I've done this." Then God said to him in the dream, "Yes, I know that you've done this in the integrity of your heart. And it was I who kept you from sinning against me. Therefore, I did not let you touch her. Now then, return the man's wife, for he is a prophet, so that he will pray for you and you shall live. But if you do not return her, know that you shall surely die, you and all who are yours." So Abimelech rose early in the morning and called his servants and told them all these things, and the men were very much afraid. Then Abimelech called Abraham and said to him, "What have you done to us? And how have I sinned against you that you have brought on me and my kingdom a great sin? You have done to me things that ought not to be done." And Abimelech said to Abraham, "What did you see that you did this thing?" Abraham said, "I did it because I thought, 'There's no fear of God at all in this place, and they will kill me because of my wife. Besides, she is indeed my sister, the daughter of my father, though not the daughter of my mother. And she became my wife. And when God caused me to wander from my father's house, I said to her, 'This is the kindness you must do to me. At every place to which we come, say of me, he is my brother.'" Then Abimelech took sheep and oxen and male servants and female servants and gave them to Abraham and returned Sarah, his wife, to him. And Abimelech said, "Behold, my land is before you. Dwell where it pleases you." To Sarah, he said, "Behold, I have given your brother 1,000 pieces of silver. It is a sign of your innocence in the eyes of all who are with you, and before everyone you are vindicated." Then Abraham prayed to God, and God healed Abimelech and also healed his wife and female slaves, so that they bore children. For the Lord had closed all the wombs of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. May the Lord bless the hearing of his word. For the past few weeks, we have stumbled on a figure in Genesis who has been absolutely perplexing. It was Lot. He was the absolute worst example to us of what a follower of the Lord should be. I trust you agree with me on that. The whole story of Lot could be summarized in New Testament language that this was a man who barely escaped. And the glorious truth was put on display that of Romans 5, where sin abounded, grace abounded much more. And last time, we saw that God would send the Messiah. Amazing as that was, as he intervened in that mess, that terrible mess in the cave, that he would send his son through a daughter of Lot. It was an overwhelming section to preach. How did you walk away from all of that? I trust you were somewhat taken by the Lord's intervention, but weren't you all in agreement with the life of Lot that's the really bad life? That's I'm sure you took from that. I mean, we classify that as we talk about sin, don't we? I mean, the really bad sins, drunkenness and homosexuality and incest, all of the bad stuff. And I think it would be easy to walk away from that whole story in Lot and think, you know, I'm really not doing any of those things. I'm doing fairly well when it comes to that. My life is pretty much together. You know, I've got all that stuff under control. And hey, maybe we think the answer is just live in Mayberry, not Sodom. And if I keep my life morally pure, then God will bless me. That's how we think. We have this kind of if-then contract with God, don't we? We think that way. That's how we think the relationship goes. Well, it's interesting that we've not considered, probably as well as we should have, how impossible the if really is. If then. How impossible is the if? In other words, if we think that we've got it all together just because our house is in order and I'm not the Lot, I really don't identify with Lot so much, and we've achieved somewhat, some kind of progress in the Christian life morally with God, pleasing Him, well, then you're going to be rather stunned today to open up Genesis chapter 20. Because here is Abraham at not 75, but 100 years old, stumbling over what you would consider is the least little sin. And I believe the Lord set this up today and contrasts all this. And you see how all of this is given by inspiration of the Spirit. He sets all of this up for a reason. And He's been teaching us about this. He's been teaching us that sin has far-reaching consequences. And in all of this, He wants us to realize that the depths of His love doesn't just come for the really bad sinners. That the depths of His love comes for everyone who's a bad sinner. And this is an amazing story. The depths of His love come for all of His sheep. But notice how Abraham is put on display. It's going to tie in nicely today with what we're celebrating at this time of year. Here's the question I want you to ask this morning. This is the question I hope to answer by the time that we're done. Why has the promise been so slow in coming? It's a fair question. Here's what I'm provoked with. Isn't it interesting that by the time this scene is done, wombs are opening up everywhere? That is a remarkable thing. And the Lord is showing us something here in this whole scene. He wants us to consider, first off, how dangerous the sin of unbelief is, how it showed itself so small, as we think, in the life of Abraham, in the most unexpected of places, and how He's bringing us, how His purpose is to bring us into a posture of prayer, trusting that He is in control of every single aspect of our lives. Every. And it's beautiful because you're looking here at God's determination today to bring Abraham to this posture of prayer. And His determination to send His son, which nothing can frustrate. Let's look at this. In verse 1, we read that from there Abraham journeyed toward the territory of the Negev and lived between Kadesh and Shur. So he journeyed in, notice this, he sojourned in Gerar. After the Sodom event, Abraham took off. He packed up and he began to head in the opposite direction. And he really is moving, if you study this out, back in the direction of Egypt, just like at the beginning of his journey. He is fleeing in the absolute opposite toward Egypt, away from where he should be, to the border of the promised land. This is Philistine territory. This is the great city of Gerar, Philistine, later Philistine, superpower. It's fascinating because the text says that he's now dwelling in the city. Yes, he's a sojourner, but he is in the city. It doesn't make a lot of sense, does it? It's a little bit perplexing because he just saw Lot dwell in a city, and Abraham has now run to a city. And when you begin to consider the whole picture, I believe what you have here of the picture that Abraham, the Lord is painting for us of Abraham is this. He just saw wicked Sodom burn to ashes. And he runs as far as possible away from that as he could go. And what is the perspective? Well, verse 11 tells us. What does Abraham say about this place? There's no fear of God here. They'll kill me. And they will try to do to my wife what the men of Sodom tried to do to the angels, is the whole thought. It's all wicked. Whole earth is wicked. What do you have here? I think you have a really discouraged Abraham. I think you have a really discouraged Abraham, seriously discouraged over the state of things. I mean, can you imagine seeing a major section of the world? Can you imagine seeing Las Vegas standing there and watching the thing be burned to ashes? Well, the pain of that. I don't know if he knows where Lot is. For Abraham, as time went on and life progressed and he faced the hardship, it seems as if he is going forward forgetting the promises. And that he would be, as the Lord said, a blessing to all the nations. Remember, the Lord said that. There's no good in this place. You're going to be the blessing, Abraham. Now, God said this. And so here is your Abraham, discouraged and conflicted. And what happens? Now, Abraham, verse 2, said of Sarah, his wife, "She is my sister." And Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. You got to be kidding me. It happened again. The same thing that has his deja vu. This happened at the beginning of his call. And here at the very end, before the birth of Isaac, this whole episode plays out again. His wife, now 90, is still a knockout. It should be an encouragement to the older ladies here. This particular sin, back in chapter 12, remember it? You have this moment where he's discouraged because of right after his initial call, and famine comes, and he goes down to Egypt, and he did this same thing. He said to Sarah, "Listen, just say that you're my sister so that it may go well for me." And remember what happened with Pharaoh? It didn't go so well. Pharaoh didn't have to abide by anything. Pharaoh takes his wife. And Abraham, in the first scene after the promise scene, after all these promises are rehearsed, threw away everything. He's outside the land, and he's thrown away the woman appointed to bear the seed. It was an awful scene. Now, that's the beginning of his walk. We're nearing his death. 100 years old. And lo and behold, here we are again. I mentioned the Heidelberg last week, and I mentioned the least holy. What do they do? What about the holiest making a small beginning in this sanctification? Look at Abraham. Now, we kind of chuckle at this. You know, this is, we might think, an interesting story, and this happens. You know the same thing's going to happen with his son a few chapters later. He's going to do the same thing to his wife. Massive problem. But is it a little sin? Is it? Little white lie. If you look at Abraham and you study his life, in times of real weakness, there have been three sort of incidents that, as we have gone through the life of Abraham, that stand out. It was that first incident down in Egypt, and then you had the Hagar incident where he tried to accomplish producing the seed himself with another woman. And then you have this toward the end of life, these three major episodes. And what is so common in all of them? What stands out in all of them? Well, it's that Abraham, in weakness and discouragement and in fear, when circumstances overwhelmed him, he, in all of this uncertainty, took matters into his own hands. The real sin being, he didn't trust the Lord. He didn't trust the Lord. Now, that may seem like a little sin compared to, oh man, homosexuality and incest. You know? Do we even compare these things? God is showing you something this morning. Look at verse 12. Abimelech confronts him. What happened when Abimelech confronts him? Remember what Abraham says. "I thought surely the fear of God is not in this place, and they will kill me on account of my wife." Now, I want you to stop, and I want you to listen to the original contract that Abraham made with his wife back in chapter 12 and compare this in verse 13. This is chapter 12. Here's what happened as he started out. When he was about to enter Egypt, he said to Sarah, his wife, "I know that you are a woman of beautiful appearance. And when the Egyptians see you, they will say, 'This is his wife.' Then they will kill me, but they will let you live." Now compare that with our text. "Say you are my sister," verse 13, "that it may go well with me." Now look at, as we go on in verse 12 to our text. "But indeed, she is truly my sister. He is the daughter of my father, she's the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother. And she became my wife. And it came to pass when God caused me to wander from my father's house that I said to her, 'This is your kindness that you should do for me. In every place, wherever we go, say of me, he is my brother.'" And what stands out to you there? God caused me to wander. God caused me to wander. And here's how we plan to deal with this from the beginning. God prevented me from settling. God would not let me settle. And because of that, this is the way that we dealt with it. As we were always on the move, and we were moving around everywhere in this life, the way that we dealt with it is we came up with this plan, this contract, that wherever we go, we're going to do this. This is how we're going to deal with this. What he just confessed is this. He just said, "We've been doing this the whole time. We have been doing this the whole time." 25 years of a contract sinfully between him and his wife. His way of dealing with hardship. Do you think we can learn from that this morning? This was a real besetting sin. And all of us have them. When people are faced with great pressures and circumstances beyond themselves, what is the response? How do we deal? How do we fix problems? How do we dull the problem? What do we do when you don't feel like you are in control? Watch those moments of discouragement. I'm sure a whole bunch of you are facing it right now. What do you run to? Has there been a single sin over the course of your life that every time you become discouraged or down or frustrated with where the Lord has you, that you go back to, that you retreat to, that you go to? A particular sin. Is there? That little sin that you've kept and you've held on to is unbelief. What did God say? "Next time this year, I'm giving you the son." In chapter 18, remember, he said, it's a year away, Abraham. He gave him insight. It's a year away. Here was the last scene before the birth of his son. This today is the last scene before the birth of his son. Do you find that coincidental? At the very last moment, just before it happened, he threw it all away once again with this sin. Consequence? That little sin, not homosexuality, not incest, that little white lie wrecked everything. Everything. His wife is in the hands of another king. At the beginning of his calling, he fled the promised land, cast away his wife to Pharaoh, and now at the end of his life, he has done the same thing with this little white lie. All of history, you see, was tied to this woman. The womb of this woman. And everything that we celebrate today, everything that we've gathered for today, had this taken its course, had Abimelech taken Sarah, had Pharaoh taken Sarah, you wouldn't be here. Do you realize the huge consequences this sin could have brought upon you to this day? So what happened? Here's where the contrast is really extreme. It's not so much between Abraham and Lot, is it? The contrast is between Abraham, Lot, and the Lord. What does he do? Well, God had committed through better or for worse, and when he made that promise, he doesn't renege on it. And the contrast that we have here is what the Lord does versus all of these people whom he has made these promises to completely failing. Back in chapter 18, the Lord said, at the time of life, the child is coming. Nothing could stop it. Nothing could stop it. In the fullness of time, this son would come. It had already been determined. This son would be born at this particular time. But why the wait? Verse 3. It's so abrupt in verse 3, isn't it? Feel the force in which God answers this situation. God thunders down, and this massive confrontation happens over Sarah. If you look at verse 3, but God came to Abimelech in a dream by night and said to him, indeed, you are a dead man because of the woman whom you have taken, for she is a man's wife. I find this to be awesome. Awesome. Look at what he just did. God comes to Abimelech in a dream and completely intervenes. And look at the way he holds this pagan king accountable for the sin of adultery. Even though he hadn't touched her, this is the sin that would have been brought upon that nation. This is another man's wife, says the Lord. You're as good as dead while she stays with you. Abimelech's devastated. I mean, can you hear the plea from this king? You know, I haven't touched her, Lord. Lord, pleads his case. Will you slay a righteous nation? He lied. He said, she's my sister. And she said, he's my brother. And they both lied. And in the integrity of my heart and in the innocence of my hands, I've done this. It's a moving scene because, generally speaking, this is a very moral king. This is not like Sodom. He didn't have the written law of God. He didn't have God's law. God comes and appeals to the law written on his conscience, and it's there. See it? And Abimelech says, in the integrity of my heart, this was an honorable king. And the Lord says, I know. I know. Because the real reality is, I have kept you from sinning. I have kept you. I didn't let you touch her. You return her right now. You put her on that camel, whatever it was. God is in control of every single action and every heart of every king in this world. Do you understand that? And what was Abraham's fear from the beginning? There's no fear of God in this place. They're going to kill me. The Lord just demonstrated that every king, every decision is under his absolute control.
So when those little besetting sins hamper you, when you find yourself frustrated, wondering about God's authority and his creation, well, a marvelous passage to go back to once again and realize that he is in control of everything. And those besetting sins then become, as Pastor Chris mentioned a moment ago, simple unbelief. We need to get back to believing in the very God who has redeemed us, right? And this is Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Thank you for joining us today. It's our prayer. Our time together encourages you in Christ. If you have a praise report, we would love to hear from you. They always mean a great deal to us. It lets us know that the program is, in fact, having a positive effect on your life as you seek to live it out to the glory of God in the grace of Christ. Here's how you reach out to us. As always, our web address, agradio.org. Other formats are available. The jumping off points there for Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, again, agradio.org. Or give us a call, 888-504-8805. If you're writing to us, the address is Abounding Grace Radio, P.O. Box 732, Linden, Washington. The zip code is 98264. And then, if you have a question or a praise report, we would encourage you to pull out your smartphone, access the Voice Memo app, leave your name and where you're calling from, your praise report or your question, and then email that audio to us at questions@agradio.org. And we'll do our best to have Chris answer any question you have, or we'll at least be encouraged by your praise reports. That always means a great deal to us. But again, get out that voice memo app. Send us a question or a praise report to questions@agradio.org. And then come back and join us again next time. Until then, may Christ be your abounding grace. Abounding Grace is brought to you on this radio station by Abounding Grace Radio Ministries.
Hi, I'm Chris Gordon, the host of Abounding Grace Radio. I'm also the pastor of the Escondido United Reformed Church. If you are local to Southern California and live near the Escondido area, we would love to see you at one of our worship services on Sunday. We worship at 9:30 a.m. and 6 o'clock p.m. at the Escondido United Reformed Church, 1864 North Broadway here in Escondido. You can find us on the web at www.escondidourc.org. EscondidoURC.org. The Escondido United Reformed Church, a place where the Bible is sincerely believed and faithfully taught.